Okay, let's do this. Let's get Ron Higgins in here. He's down in Sandestin, Florida. Ron Higgins, like many of us, saw Orlando Woolridge back in the glory days. What a tough guy. What a great player. And I'll tell you what he was to this program. He was a friend of this show. Anytime we wanted Orlando to come on the show through the years, he came on. And that is, sometimes it's just really hard to comprehend things like that. And it's a confirmation that we're all getting older, right?
Yep.
You see a guy like Orlando Woolridge pass away, that is...
He's 3 years younger than me.
Wowee. Ron Higgins is in Sandestin, Florida. Let's bring him in. Ron, good morning to you, sir. Before we do anything else and talk about the SEC, your thoughts on the passing of a basketball great, Orlando Woolridge.
Well, if I remember correctly, and of course I'm a little bit older than Orlando, I wrote about him when he was at Notre Dame. I believe I wrote about him. I think it was Mansfield, Louisiana High School. I think it was Louisiana. I'm pretty sure. But I remember doing something with him when he was at Notre Dame, and before he even got to the pros. And just a great basketball player, but as you got to know him, an even better person. And a lot of times in pro sports, those things don't necessarily cross. When you're in pro sports, there's a lot of guys who kind of all of a sudden feel entitled. I never got that feeling when I dealt with him. I just thought he always had great perspective. And that's the first I heard of it. I'm really shocked and saddened by it because he was more than just a good basketball player. He was a really, really good person.
He was a really personable guy, you know. Now, and I don't want to read too much into this, but I know he had a few personal problems. He had that issue with getting caught with the theft of the aluminum or something. He had some kind of legal issues around himself. But still, Ron, every time we dealt with him here, he was such an interesting guy. He's a well-spoken guy, real introspective type person, was fun to talk basketball with, really loved the game. Two kids that he had playing at a really high level in Division I basketball. His son was such a breath of fresh air here, and he's now out in Southern California. When you hear something like that, it just kind of takes the air out of my lungs a little bit. It's hard to describe, but that's just how I feel as we deal with the news of the passing of Orlando Woolridge.
Yeah, I mean, you see somebody, you know, especially an ex-athlete who was so, you remember how, you know, big and strong and how vital he was, and the energy which he played, and also like he had the personality to go with it. You know, when you see at age 52, it just, that's younger than me by a couple of years. It's just kind of like, wow. You never know when it's your time, so you live each day as it comes and try not to get worked up too much about certain things because you realize, you know, it's just the, just as you get older, you know, you enjoy life every day, and you get a little bit less aggravated about trivial things.
Amen to that. I couldn't have put it better myself. And speaking of trivial things, these things in the grand scheme are trivial. But the stuff that's going on this week in Sandestin, all this expansion, all this, what do we do about this expansion, all this talk about schedules, all this talk about playoff, this is stuff I never thought we'd see, Ron. I remember having you on. We used to talk about how playoff, that's never going to happen. These guys, that's never going to happen. The winds of change, though, in major college football, they blow so quickly. It's like tornadic activity. It's like 1 minute, it's sunny outside. Then it clouds up, and before you know it, boom, your house is laying there in rubble. So let's deal with what's coming down the pike. First of all, the presidents are going to vote today. What do you expect to happen on the schedule thing based on people you've talked to?
I think in the end, they'll go back to their 6-1-1 concept. I think the presidents are comfortable with that. I don't know. I mean, for TV purposes, I don't think you could go 6-2 and not have a permanent opponent. One, that would ruin division rivals, interdivision rivals, you know, your Tennessee Alabamas of the world and your LSU Floridas. And frankly, TV would hate not having those games every year. I mean, if you're going to get all this money from TV and trying to get more money from TV, you better have the inventory that they want a guaranteed inventory of what they're getting every year. And, you know, they know that they're going to get Tennessee, Alabama every year. They know they'll get LSU, Florida every year. They'll know they'll get those crossover, you know, games every year. And I don't believe that they'll do anything, but after all the discussion back and forth, they'll do anything but 6-1-1.
Rod, I'm sure everyone's put the welcome mat out, but can you get any feel at all for the other conference members' feelings about A&M and Missouri entering the league?
I think they like them here. I mean, their football and basketball coaches are very personable. I mean, I really like Kevin Sumlin at A&M. I think he's he has a reverence for the SEC. I mean, he talked about when he was a young coach. I mean, he would go to the University of Florida and study Spurrier. I think they'll be good for this league. I think both schools will be good for this league. Missouri, at first I wasn't wild about the idea, but I'm starting to warm up to Missouri more than A&M. I thought A&M was a great get from the beginning because having dealt with A&M a lot when they played LSU in the 60s and 70s, I always kind of felt, I mean, they had a program that would fit the SEC in a lot of ways, especially as much money as those cattle and oil rich Aggies have over there. But they would have the money to compete in the SEC. And I think they'll do just fine off the bat. I mean, I'm thinking probably maybe a little more competitive than Missouri off the bat. Missouri will bring it in basketball for sure and some other sports. But I mean, I think what shocks these people the most from A&M and Missouri, from what I've seen, is feel relieved to be in a comfortable voice where they don't feel like one school's running it, like Texas. They go in a meeting, they have a voice, their opinion's heard, and it's valued. And that's as much as anything why they left the Big 12. And I think they really, really enjoyed the fact that, you know, they have input and it's valued. I get that from, you know, the athletic directors of each school. I mean, the coaches seem pleased. I mean, so far that they really like the fact they feel like, you know, I mean, they're an equal partner and stuff.
Ron, what's going to happen with the basketball schedules? Do you think that they're going to iron something out today, or are they going to let this thing float and figure it out down the road?
No, I think they'll iron out today. I think they'll have an 18-game schedule, and I think you'll have, one permanent home and home every year against a rival. I think for Tennessee, that'd be Vanderbilt. Then you'd have, four other teams with a home and home. Four home and home, they're played on and off. And then you play the rest of the teams either home or away. So that's 2 + 8 + 8. That's 18. That's your schedule. That's what I think they'll come out of this.
We talked to Konzo Martin a couple weeks ago on the program. In fact, it was 2 weeks ago today. He told us that if, in fact, that comes to pass, he is committed to scheduling Kentucky in the non-league schedule. Do you think Cal, knowing Cal, Ron, from your Memphis days, do you think Cal is going to bend over backwards to accommodate Tennessee in that? In other words, keep the home and home. Only one of the games counts in league schedule, one of the games counts in non-league. Do you think Cal's going to meet Tennessee in that request?
Put it this way. I mean, that'll be one of the games that rotate on and off. You know, the way I see it, I say every school is going to have one team in the division that's a home and home every year.
That's
and
right.
For Kentucky, it's going to be Florida.
That's right.
I mean,
But what Konzo told us, Ron, is because that's the case, he said it would be disgraceful for college basketball, and particularly for Tennessee fans, if Tennessee doesn't get a chance to see Kentucky every year in this building. He said, so I'm committed in years where we're scheduled to play up there, I'm committed to try and schedule them in the non-league here, in our non-league schedule, in December.
That'll be interesting if that happens. I don't think he'll do it. No, I don't.
You don't think Cal will
do
it?
No.
He will not.
Nope.
Why?
Nope. Because Cal's all about, he's all about scheduling, as many natural powers as he can, that'll be, and I'm not saying Tennessee's a national power, but I mean, they take a little dip in this transition here, and they may get back there, but he's all about scheduling, TV savvy, big money games that you can play in neutral sites like the North Carolinas of the world. Of course, he's bickering back and forth to Indiana now. He's running out of people to play. He's pissing everybody off so much. But to me, I don't think he would do that. I don't think he would venture outside the conference and do that. I don't think so.
Wow.
Ron, clarify this for me. It's my understanding that their intent is Tennessee and Vandy will play home and home every year, and then Tennessee will have four other teams that they play a home and home with, and basically those teams will stay on for 4 years. Now, you'll lose one each year and pick up another. So, in other words, Tennessee would play Kentucky on a home and home for 4 years, and then it would be 8 years of one game and done. Is that correct?
I think it's something like that. Yeah, I'm trying to think of all the parameters of this thing because it's not as easy to follow as it used to be. But I think it's four teams. I'm trying to think. Yeah, it's 4 years, and then they rotate on and off. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's correct. Yeah.
Hey, Ron, whether you're a proponent of expansion and the playoffs or whatever, this offseason has to be one of the most eventful for writers and followers of the game of any in recent memory. Have I missed one in there? Is that the way you feel about this offseason?
No, I mean, now because the playoff has finally come to fruition, I don't think they're going to expand again anytime soon. That's just me, but it took them 20 years to get from 12 to 14 teams, and I realized that the atmosphere out there is pretty volatile right now to go, get two other teams, but it's not as easy as it looks. A lot of people look at it and say, well, hey, we'll just go get, if the ACC blows up, we'll go get North Carolina and Duke. It's not that easy. It's not like rotisserie league here. It takes a lot to position yourself and then work behind the scenes and then, have to jump through hoops to get, get schools acclimated into your league. But the playoff thing, and that's it's finally coming to fruition. For years and years and years, we talked about, should they have a playoff? Will they ever have a playoff? You've convinced presidents, you need a playoff, and the presidents are buying into it, and it's the point where, we're going to have a playoff. We just got to figure out what format we want. I know what the SEC wants. They want the four best teams in the game, regardless of conference. That's their stand. That's non-negotiable.
Know what I think's interesting? You talk about with them, it's non-negotiable. If they could easily make that point behind closed doors in Chicago, what they've done to Jim Delaney, what they've done to Scott, what they're doing across the board. You've got Mike's Live and DeLoss Dodds yesterday, who wields a pretty big stick. He's basically the commissioner of the Big 12, if he's not the commissioner of the whole shooting match with his own network and all the wealth that Texas controls. Those guys have come out publicly and said, this is, as you just said, non-negotiable. Ron, why do you think those guys are out publicly in front of this instead of doing it behind closed doors? What's the point behind getting out? Because really, they're shaming right now the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. They're shaming those two conferences right now with saying, hey, look, guys, our stick's bigger than yours, and not only are we going to wave it behind closed doors, we're going to wave it in your face. We're going to do it publicly. Why do you think these smart men are handling it, have chosen this tact?
Because they want the public opinion behind them. They're telling the public, for years you wanted a playoff, okay? For years you wanted to see what you thought were the four best teams in the playoff. And now we're having other conferences say, well, wait a second. We'll have a playoff, but maybe we shouldn't have the four best teams. Maybe not the top four in the final BCS rankings. If, if you're not a conference champion, you have to be a conference champion to be in that top four to get. What they're telling everybody is, they're telling the public is, hey, we want what you want now. You want the top four teams? We want the top four teams. These other conferences that don't, they're not in your best interest. I mean, they're not going to give you what you wanted all these years. They're going to give you what they want. We're trying to give you what you want, four best teams.
When it comes down, and Ron, I'm a proponent of the best four teams, not the conference champion. But when it comes right down to it,
right,
with the ACC and the Big East and the Big Ten and the Pac-12 out there struggling to ever win a championship,
right,
can the SEC and the Big 12 win that fight when it comes right down to a vote?
Great question.
Now, there may be some kind of compromise in the middle that you have to be a conference champion ranked above a certain number to be considered for the Final Four, or there's a selection committee That's, of all the issues going on right now, that's the most interesting, how that's going to play out. That's the story for the rest of the summer, is how is that thing going to play out? I don't know if we would even have this conversation about the best four teams or whatever if LSU and Alabama hadn't played the game last year. If same conferences playing top two, I don't know if we'd have this conversation.
I like the concept of Nick Saban telling another individual that he's arrogant and detached. I'm into that. Ron, I appreciate you, my friend. It was a pleasure spending a few minutes with you. Thanks for blessing us with your time, man.
All right, guys. Always good to talk to you. And talk to you all, Tony. Everything good with you?
Beautiful, man. How about you? You still playing any music?
I'm still playing music. My son's in the music production now. That's what he's going to go into, music production business. And when he gets into college and stuff like that, he's very good at it. And I just, just trying to get from season to season in this business.
That's what it's all about, man. And keep doing what you're doing, brother.
Take care, guys.
Thank you, my
friend. Thanks, Ron.
Ron's an accomplished drummer. A lot of people don't know that. Sometimes you go down on Beale Street and see some of the blues bands playing, you'll see Ron Higgins back there behind a kit.
Really?
Hitting the skins. Yep. I meant to ask him about the passing of Doc Dunn and those guys. A couple of the other Memphis staples who have recently passed away.